So we're going to talk a little bit, just for a few minutes this morning, before we get started, about some of the side benefits of doing palpation. And to me, in terms of East Asian medicine everywhere, but particularly in the West, there are a couple of big problems that if we don't take care of, will come back to bite us. And I'm somewhat concerned that in 20, 30 years, people in the West won't actually have access to reasonable East Asian medicine if a bunch of things don't change. Some of the things that need to change are way beyond my ken, the things I know nothing about, but I think there's a couple things that to me are very important that I may know a little bit about. And one to me is there's a sense of abstraction that our medicine, and I think if something is abstract, I think its long-term viability, particularly in the modern West, is not good. And so palpation helps work against this idea that Chinese medicine is abstract. Because abstract means almost arbitrary in a certain level. And we talk about the organs and things like that. I know this is true the way I was taught in East Asia, that I had the very strong impression that the label of liver or kidneys or whatever to a group of functions was somewhat arbitrary, that it had nothing to do with the actual meat of those organs. And I'm very, very, very convinced that's completely untrue. But part of the bad thing about making it abstract is then it just becomes arbitrary. You can just play around with it. And when you start to do palpation, it's very clear that the liver means the liver, and you have different ideas about what different things mean. And so because it's not abstract, you have to deal with it in a different way than if it's abstract. So one example I like to use a lot, actually, is the triple burner or the sanjiao or however you translate it. And it's probably, in my practice, the single most commonly used channel in my work. And this is one of the, this is what I'm talking about. It's okay to talk about this for a few minutes. It's not because I used to have an affinity for the triple burner in a silly way, because I'm a person of no particular ability, but for various reasons, I'm quite famous. And one way they talked about the sanjiao in ancient China is that it has a name but no substance. So I said, that's me. But I found out, maybe true for me or not, that this translation of that phrase is wrong. And what it means is it has a name but no form. Because I'm very clear from the palpation again that the sanjiao refers to the membranes primarily of the trunk, the pleura and the peritoneum. So these have no form because they're bags, and bags take the form of whatever you put in them, okay? And so it's just an example. And that if you ever start doing cranial work, or if you do cranial work, the triple burner channel has incredibly close connection to the cranial base. And again, this is not something that I was drinking tea or some other beverage and thought, that sounds cool. It's like, I found start feeling these channels, and it's like, what is that? Why would this triple burner, which is nothing, right? In my studies, it was like this kind of an appendage almost. So it's just an example that when you start to palpate things and make it concrete, then you no longer can deal with things as an abstraction. And I think that's a huge benefit to our patients and to our understanding of the medicine. It's just not sitting there drinking and discussing. And that gets to the second side benefit, is that it works against convention. A lot of things done in East Asian medicine everywhere are done by convention. And I think in the long term, that's not a viable strategy for a medical approach. And the example I like to use the most is point location. And so the people who studied with me before are probably, up to this point, are amazed that I haven't ranted about anything at all. But that's going to change. Okay. So, as I mentioned yesterday, the object of point location is to find a place that you can do some kind of stimulation that gets the response that you are looking for from the body. And it's not defined by any kind of, precisely, any kind of gudu, bone measurement. It's not like, you know, it's 3 units from here. That's about where it is. You have to learn things that way, but if you treat patients that way, it just doesn't work. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And there used to be some of the people, like there was a while in California. Let's give a couple examples of craziness. In California, about 20 years ago maybe, in order to make it easy to do, in the licensing exam, they did point location with the patient standing. So they could process people much quicker. They didn't have to have tables and things like that. And so the schools taught point location with people standing. And then when the students got into the clinic, they had like no idea where any of the points were, right? And then also maybe about 10 years ago or so, I had a friend who had trained in Japan who went to British Columbia, and they had to find these certain points. And so we said, oh, you know, large intestine 4 is here, and triple burner 5 is there, and you know, maybe pericardium 6 is here. And they got done, and they said, oh, we're very sorry, you failed. He said, why did I fail? He said, you touched the patient. You have to do it without touching the patient. So, okay. So he thought, oh, this is just a trick. You know, there's so many acupuncturists. There's like 1,700 licensed people to do Chinese medicine in the province of British Columbia. So it's just like, this is just a way to keep people out. But he was wrong, because they said, now that you know this, would you like to do the test again? He said, sure. So large intestine 4 is here, and triple burner 5 is there, and pericardium. Good, you pass. Now, that province doesn't do, they have found point location exams impossible to do. So they just don't do it at all anymore. But the idea that this was something real, and again, you know, the WHO over the last 20 years has had a series of meetings, many, many meetings, trying to standardize point location between the different, primarily national, what is a national point location. And they'll have these meetings, and the Japanese will say, oh, you know, lungs 7 is here for these reasons, and the Chinese will say, no, no, it's here for these reasons, and whatever. And then at the end, they have a vote. And whoever votes wins, that's the standard location. And if you do WHO-sponsored research, you're supposed to use those research. So it's insane, okay? And the example I always give is if you had to have your blood drawn and you went to see the phlebotomist, is that the... And they said, well, you know, I know that the brachial vein is like 2 out of 12 things between here and here, so I take out a stretchy ruler and say, oh yeah, the vein's right there. And so then I'm going to take the hypodermic needle and stick it in your arm, you would like, you know, just run out of the room. So unless you think the channels are more fixed in location than the veins, or have less variation than anything else in the human body, right? This idea makes no sense. It's a perfectly reasonable way to teach. And kind of, it's like, you know, triple burner five is around, it's not over here, it's not over there, but to actually think that that's where it goes. So that kind of conventionality is just crazy. And when you start palpating, whatever kind of palpation, this is not specific to the stuff that we teach, but any kind of palpation, convention then goes out the window. So that's just, and it, we, some of the stuff came up yesterday when we had, we found like maybe the yang rhythm was over here, was the most least, and global listening took us someplace else, and we did that practice to decide which was the most important. And some of our colleagues here were saying like, well, that's crazy. How does that work? Why would it be anything like that? And I thought, okay, well, what's the difference between liver-spleen problems and spleen-liver problems, right? You know, there's sometimes things go from one way to the other, but if you're thinking about it, that's abstract, and somehow it doesn't bother people as much as something that's concrete. But it's the same thing. And so I think this, and that's why we call this work now, this is, of course, Chip's name. I'm not good at names. Engaging vitality, because you're engaging the medicine. You just can't accept, oh, someone said this, or it's supposed to be like that. You have to, like, deal with it, in part because it's no longer abstract. You can't go based on convention. So we did the thing about over-treatment again. This last week I was in Vancouver lecturing during the question period. I mentioned in my lecture about over-treatment, which I'll do later this morning. And so one of the participants said, so are you telling me that if I have this 12-point protocol, like I'm supposed to check every two or three needles to see if I've over-treated the person? I said, well, yeah. In fact, maybe after you start doing this, you won't be doing that many 12-point protocols. You'll try to figure out what's going on and how to treat them. He was, what? And he said, well, and I do Tuina. So like, I do Tuina, I'm supposed to do 50 reps of some kind of Tuina technique. So I'm supposed to like stop every three or four reps and figure out if I've over-treated them or not. Said, well, no, you probably can feel as you do the reps if you're over-treating. He said, oh yeah, that makes sense. So anyway, this idea that there's these conventions, that there, you know, that there are these points, that these things that are just set in stone, I think that's not going to work in the long term. I want to kind of speak slightly differently, because it's not that those things are wrong, that the points are wrong, but they're just usually like the most common or something like that. They're not necessarily used. So the last story is many, many years ago, I was working in a psychiatric hospital, and I was treating someone who was deaf and blind from inappropriate and unnecessary insulin shock therapy, okay? And she had shoulder pain, and someone was watching me, and this person, we had to communicate with her by writing letter by letter on her hand.
Oh.
And she was not very excited about people putting needles in her, because in the past, when people put needles in her, it wasn't a very good result. So we had to explain to her that there was nothing, we weren't injecting anything, because she'd been in this hospital since the 30s. This is in the 1980s. So she didn't know about acupuncture. And so she had shoulder, she couldn't move her shoulder. And so I did my stuff, and I did Genyu. I just did turned out the points I used were the most common shoulder points. And we got done, and we only could do two or three because she was not doing, and then her shoulder was much better. And the person who was observing me, he was a practitioner, also trained in Japan, was like crestfallen. He was really disappointed. He said, Dan, those are like the points everybody uses for shoulder pain. I said, well, maybe because they're the points that usually work. Right? So it's not that the common points, like, oh, I don't want to do that. I'm too cool to do those points. That's not what I'm saying. But that you do it because you find them, and you usually find the most common points because they are the most useful. So you shouldn't, you understand what I'm saying? It's not a convention thing. Okay? I think maybe that's enough. I was going to talk a little bit about Byalban, but I think we don't have time.